On the second anniversary of the deadly January 6 riot on Capitol Hill, the proceedings of Congress have once again ground to a halt, this time because of far-right Republican lawmakers who still deny the 2020 election results. They hold just enough votes to deny Republican leader Kevin McCarthy the speakership in the House of Representatives. He's failed in vote after vote, but he is gaining some momentum and he's now flipped a number of holdouts to yes votes. Also, today President Biden is awarding the Presidential Citizens Medal to a dozen January 6 police officers and election workers who feared for their safety because of their work. We'll talk about all of this on our Friday Politics Roundtable. Joining us is Franco Ordonez, NPR White House correspondent. Hey, Franco.
Hello.
And Enrique Acevedo, he's the anchor of NMAS and a contributor to CBS News. Welcome, Enrique.
Great to be with you.
So let's go straight to the House. There are 20 holdouts who've been voting against McCarthy, but now a few of them in this very current vote happening right now are flipping their votes and supporting him. Do we have any information on what kind of concessions they may have been offered and why they're flipping now, Franco?
Well, we know that there have been a lot of talks. I mean, Kevin McCarthy had, you know, come out at some of those meetings and was talking to some reporters kind of huddled around him before the vote. And he, you know, commented that they'd made some progress, but he left, you know, didn't say exactly whether he would have the votes. And as you just noted, there have already started the voting and he does not have the number of votes that he needs to win in this round of voting. But he has picked up more votes than he did. There's been a lot of moments of applause for him as some of the 20 that had voted against him that turned to vote for him, including South Carolina Representative Greg Norman, who has been one of the most vocal critics of McCarthy. So while he doesn't have the numbers that he needs this round, he's got some momentum, and this is likely to put some pressure on some of the other holdouts to possibly in future votes to try to come over.
So, Enrique, critics of these 20 holdouts, maybe fewer now, say they're not all that interested in actually governing. What do they want?
I mean, I understand the criticism. It's easier to be opposition than it is to govern. It's easier to be campaigning than it is to be sworn in a position and deliver results. And I think we have to make a broader point here and say democracy, it's about legitimacy, but it's also about performance. And so results do matter, not just in terms of the House functioning, which it doesn't until the new members are sworn in, until we have a proper protocol addressed. And I think, you know, the fact that this minority keeps hijacking the entire legislative agenda and the operation of the lower chamber, it allows us to make that point about, well, how can democracy work if it's not delivering the results the American people need? And the American people are not so much concerned about this protocols as they are about getting things done. And I think that's where the criticism is coming from.
I think one of the other things to pick up on your point there, Enrique, that's worrying people is the concessions that are being made to flip some of these rebels over to the other side. And Franco, it makes me wonder, where are the moderates in the Republican Party? Are they worried about what the concessions will mean for doing the business of the House? Are Democrats worried about that?
I mean, there's definitely concern about those concessions. I mean, some of those concessions are so significant that they would, you know, make bipartisanship even harder. They will, you know, these committee assignments that are being called for, putting more extreme positions on these committees, would very likely change the tenor of those debates. And, you know, go in a much, you know, even, you know, more, you know, more uh, more divisive direction. But the reality is, you know, relations are just so bad. I mean, there has been some talk about Republicans and Democrats trying to get together to find a more moderate speaker, kind of to bypass McCarthy. You know, Democrats obviously are not going to bail out McCarthy. I mean, some have floated that idea, but, you know, trust is just so bad at the moment. And there is an appetite for bipartisanship from the electorate. You know, why not have some Republicans and Democrats come together and, you know, elect a more moderate speaker who could kind of do, as Enrique was saying, you know, the will of the people, as opposed to partisanship or political, you know, moves. But, you know, the reality is right now, it's the people in the political trenches who are against this kind of thing. It's the people who are giving money to campaigns. Mm-hmm. They are not looking for that type of, necessarily that type of bipartisanship. They more want to strengthen their own side. So it just doesn't seem plausible in today's Washington. There's just so much division.
Well, let's move away from that drama for a moment and talk about something else. Yesterday, President Biden announced new immigration measures that will allow the government to turn away Cubans, Haitians, and Nicaraguans who cross the border without authorization to enter. He also expanded the ways migrants can apply for the authorization and then fly into the country rather than show up at the border. And here he acknowledges the tough political reality on immigration.
I'll sit down with anyone who in good faith wants to fix our broken immigration system. And it's hard. It's hard on the best of circumstances. But if the most extreme Republicans continue to demagogue this issue and reject solutions, I'm left with only one choice. To act on my own, do as much as I can on my own to try to change the atmosphere.
So, Enrique, do you think the moves that he's making will change what is currently a desperate situation at our southern border?
And I love the fact that these two topics are tied, even though we're trying to move away from the first one, because it shows you how, despite the large public consensus on what we need in terms of a functioning immigration system, common sense laws, the politics are so hard around the issue that we've seen these executive actions, these unilateral decisions being taken, not just from President Biden, but from the previous two administrations as well. I think, you know, we're seeing the carrot and the stick with the measures announced this week. It makes it easier for people who are coming from countries that are fleeing dictatorships and bad governance, Nicaragua, Haiti, the case of Venezuela, Cuba, to apply for immigration benefits, but it also makes it even harder for asylum seekers reaching the border to present their asylum claim and get it approved. I think there's a humanitarian history, a tradition in the U.S. of opening our arms to those in need, and in many ways this contradicts that tradition. But I understand that the administration wants to avoid the images of chaos and disorder that we keep seeing year after year at the border. They're working with Mexico and other partners in the region to try to solve this issue, the root causes. But in the meantime, they have to address the urgent matter and the patient in the ER, and that's the border. And I think that explains the measures we heard about this week.
And some of what you're saying there, Enrique, we have been hearing from immigrant advocates that they're not really happy with many of the things that has been proposed by the president or announced by the president. But you did mention he's working with Mexico. He's headed there. He's headed to El Paso on Sunday and then Mexico for a summit next week. What do you think he might achieve?
Well, you know, it's his first visit as president to the border. He's been there before. Joe Biden has always advocated for fighting the root causes of immigration, investing in the communities that are pushing these migrants to the border. Now, as president, he's taken a different approach, and of course, he's focusing on the border. Like, again, the last not just two administrations, but the U.S. government has done in the last two decades, this border security obsession and border sealment strategy that's been in place since after 9/11. I think what he's trying to achieve is a tactical and a strategic solution to the immigration challenge by providing the resources to the Border Patrol and the border agencies to deal with the influx, the very large influx of migrants. by creating a legal system that can address that demand, but at the same time, working with these partners in the region to see the ways in which they can incentivize people to remain in their communities. It's going to be very hard. That's a long-term strategic goal. And it's going to be top of mind in the North American Leaders Summit that's being held in Mexico next week.
So we have less than a minute here, Franco, but I wondered if you could tell me what you're thinking about on this date, the second anniversary of the January 6th riot. What's top of mind for you?
Yeah, I was actually here. I was covering the Trump administration during that time. And, you know, I remember, you know, his speech and being riled up. I think what really kind of stands out to me is, you know, watching, you know, the chaos, frankly, in Congress right now, and seeing the House being so divisive, seeing the Republicans being so divisive among themselves, and just how far Washington still is, even yeah. 2 years from that date. And it's a little bit disconcerting.
Franco Ordonez, NPR White House correspondent, and Enrique Acevedo, anchor of NA+, and a contributor to CBS News. Thanks.
Thank you.